FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome back. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. This is Kerry Lutz. It is that time of the month. Actually, we're a day or two late. Apologize, but it's time for Mickey Fulp's major monthly market review. Mickey, welcome back.
Hey, good to be back, Kerry.
Yeah, great to have you. And, well, hey, not a moment too soon. Let's try to make some sense, if it's possible, of what are really irrational and erratic market moves being felt all over the place, right?
Well, yes, we had quite a volatile month. Every market that we track, with the exception of the venture exchange, reached some sort of monumental high during the month. The Dow reached its all-time high on the 16th. S&P 500 flirted with 2,000, never quite made it there, reached its all-time high on July 24th. NASDAQ hit a 14-year high on July 23rd. And finally, the Russell 2000 matched its all-time high on July 3rd. But all those markets backed off by the end of the month and showed losses. Although with the exception of the Russell 2000 at 6%, the losses were fairly small. Going on the Toronto Stock Exchange, at the end of the month, we were just one day off its all-time historical high, over 15,330. And the only market really that we tracked that was down on the month was the Venture Exchange. It was on the downtick for most of the month on very light volumes, still range-bound at 1,002. And finally, the emerging market index that we track hit a 17-month high, presumably because of strength of numbers from China this month.
Yeah, pretty remarkable.
And volatility was the word, huh?
Yeah, well, we don't track the VIX, but the VIX, all of a sudden, the VIX had been totally moribund for months and months. And then all of a sudden, the VIX came racing back to life. And, you know, volatility became the buzzword, right?
Well, that's right. And we, as smart traders, we should embrace volatility. And I wrote amusing about that two or three years ago when people were upset about all the volatility in the market, and embracing volatility is the way to go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, you don't make money in markets that are just dull going sideways. Yeah, in fact, you lose money in those markets. You lose big money. So, yep. And then we go off to our commodities, to our precious metals. Speaking of losing money.
Well, they all, I shouldn't say most of them lost money over the month, or lost value, I should say. But they all rallied, and this by mid-month, gold had a range from a high of 1339, closed at 1285. Silver was down over the month after being up quite a bit for a while. Platinum was quite interesting. The strikes have finally been settled in South Africa, and this was the metal workers' steel strikes. But it made quite a little run up to 1510 and then fell off to 1472 by the end of the month. And I actually bought platinum on Friday. I saw an opportunity. I bought some platinum bars. The only one that showed strength throughout the whole month was palladium. It is now trading at a high, 2.5-year high since February of 2011. And we look at the ratios, gold to silver at 62. That's not so unusual. Platinum to gold is at the high since we started tracking it at 1.15. Platinum and palladium is the lowest it has been, get this, since August of 2002. And this was during the period when Ford, the Russians were playing politics in the palladium market and and not delivering supplies. And Ford Motor Company came in and started hoarding platinum and lost something like $1 billion. So this ratio dates all the way back since Ford got burned in the early 2000s.
Yeah. And again, you know, the labor strife seems to be over with palladium and platinum. And, you know, what's the deal here? It's going higher. Is it a geopolitical thing? Or is there something else cooking? We don't really know, but I guess we're going to find out.
Well, in my opinion, it's purely supply-demand fundamentals. You know, the market's lost 1 million ounces of platinum this year and a significant amount of palladium also. Palladium has made the big run-up, but platinum has not really responded in kind. And that's why I bought palladium bars on Friday, and I'm quite happy with my purchase. I got a good markup, and I pulled a trigger on that. Copper has now recovered all of its correction. It happened in early March. It traded as high as 328, closed at 323. And so, once again, we've seen quite a lot of volatility in the precious metals this month.
Yeah, and speaking of volatility, because that is the buzzword for the month, taking a look at energy. Wow.
I don't know what to say, except the behavior was bizarre over the month. We saw WTI go below $100 despite all this geopolitical unrest and events, lost almost 6% over the month. Brent lost well over $6 for the month, down almost 4%. And it's quite puzzling to me. We have lots of geopolitical events going on in the world. I mean, you got the Iraqi and the Kurds. You got this oil tanker holding Kurdish oil sitting offshore outside territorial waters in the U.S. You got Washington waffling on Russian sanctions. You've got ongoing geopolitical unrest, riots and civil war, et cetera, in Iraq and Syria and Libya and Afghanistan. There was a bombing today, killed American general. Oil continues to go down. We have the U.S. oil export question. Obama's taken a punt on that. But oil producers have found a loophole in that law that allows natural gas condensate, because it has very little processing, to be exported. That's ongoing. And then finally, we have this BP Chinese deal on LNG, and I'll put it out there, this idea that some of that LNG is going to be funneled from the U.S. into BP and onto the Chinese. So despite all this stuff and Russia, Ukraine still going on, the Malaysian airliner, oil takes a dive over the month, and I have no idea why.
Good question. And I read about the loophole there about doing minor processing on oil and effectively being able to export it. And look, the way that the fracking is increasing production, we're going to have gluts of this stuff in the next 2-3 years. If it continues, which it certainly appears it's going to, we're going to have to do something with the stuff because we're not consuming it now.
Well, and the problem we have in the United States, we have a refinery capacity for heavy oil.
Yeah.
And so now we have this glut of light oil coming, and we don't, we're shipping it by friggin' train or truck North Dakota to the East Coast because we don't have pipeline capability. But really, we have this glut of light oil where we don't have the refining capacity. We import heavy oil from countries such as Mexico and Venezuela because they don't have the heavy oil refining capacity. So this whole oil export thing is economically, it makes so much sense. We can ship our light oil to places where refinery capacity can deal with it, and we can take in heavy oil. But you know, once again, the Obama administration is unwilling to rile, if you will, the far left environmentalists, what the people I like to call the eco-fascists until past the November election. So we're at a standstill with Keystone. We're at a standstill with oil imports, et cetera, et cetera. Meanwhile, oil prices drop.
Yeah, go figure. And let the trains run to California and run to New York and let them choke on it, right?
I guess. And, you know, now the enviros are all concerned about the chances of derailments and oil spills, et cetera. But it's just one thing or the other.
Yeah.
Got to have oil issue. The environmental community has to have an oil issue at all times to keep fundraising going. And so it's now it's hydrofracking for shale oil in the Keystone Pipeline.
Yeah, there's always something.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yep. And on to Henry Hub, speaking of fracking, and price of gas goes down.
Oh, yeah. It just fell off the cliff, down 15% on the month. U.S. production of gas is up. We're starting to get some Marcellus production coming in the Northeast U.S. Bakken continues to produce. Eagle Ford is producing. So we've had another rise in natural gas supplies. We've had a cool summer, so air conditioners are not running. Therefore, injection into reservoirs, natural gas storage, that is up. And the markets are baking in. If you look at the contango right now, is they're baking in an El Nino warmer winter, so natural gas contangos are low right now. El Nino leads to a warmer winter in the northern tier of states. So that's all baked in, and we saw a dive of Henry Hub gas price.
Yeah, well, they better start praying for a cold winter again in the Northeast, because that's the only thing that's going to save natural gas. And speaking of commodities selling at huge discounts, we get to uranium again and more of the same, huh?
Well, but it's on the uptick. It's the one thing over the month other than palladium, as I'm looking through. Well, copper was up a little bit, but uranium was on the uptick all month. It closed the month at about 2870. And I noticed today I get uranium spot price on a daily basis now at 2913. So we're seeing this uptick. Wow. And so all I can say is, well, I hope that a base of 28 and change has been established here. This is generally a very slow time for uranium contracts. So I'm encouraged a bit. And the Japanese are making waves. They're going to restart some reactors soon. On our ratios, gold to WTI still a little less than 13 barrels of oil for an ounce of gold. The Brent to WTI maintains at 1.07, and natural gas, of course, has gone down again. So yeah, about 27-1 natural gas to WTI.
Yeah, not quite as bad as 52.
WTI to natural gas. Let me get my ratios correct.
Okay.
We don't want to deal with fractions here, right?
No. Okay. And well, it's not as bad as the 52 to one that we saw way back a couple of years ago. But yeah. Hey, it's going up again. And hey, then we get to money. Get to our dollar index and euro, and dollar's looking pretty good all of a sudden, huh?
Yeah, we had a one-year high, dollar stronger, up to 81.45 at the month. Of course, that results in a 2% increase, and lo and behold, we have a 2% decrease in the euro. That's a one-year low, and this appears to be driven by what happened at a family-run bank called Banco Espirito Santo in Portugal. We have family fraud. This is owned by one of Portugal's richest families. The Bank of Portugal, essentially the government of Portugal, has announced a $6.6 billion bailout. Now, this was a bank that passed all the stress tests with glowing colors, and it all turns out to be a fraud. And I speak Spanish, and I know that Espiritu Santo means Holy Ghost in Spanish. So the Portuguese better hope for some divine intervention in this one, I think.
Yeah, I was wondering what that meant, because I've heard it in prayers, you know.
Yes.
And, you know, in Vatican prayers, the Pope saying it, and now you've cleared that up for us.
Yeah, so that's the way you say the Trinity, the Holy Trinity, and in Spanish. And, you know, I often speak of myself in, as we, and that's the unholy Trinity of me, myself, and I.
Aha. Now we know. And hey, well, one man's or one country's misfortune, good for the dollar. And we're looking at the 10-year and the rates, boy, you know, it's just holding pretty steady, huh?
Yeah, the rate for the 10-year Treasury bond closed the month at 2.58. And we're right back where we started. You remember that song by the Kinks?
Here
we go
again.
And so we first heard about this idea to short the 10-year bonds exactly, well, 13 months ago again. And so I thought immediately of that song, and so I went and I played the YouTube video on it. It's absolutely hilarious. If you like the Kinks, go play the "Do It Again" video from Ray Davies in the early 1980s. Finally, we finish up with Bitcoin, and of everything we've talked about, the thing that had less volatility this month is Bitcoin. Now that we had a 2%. Downtick on that. It was quiet for a change. And so the VIX for Bitcoin has flatlined while everything else is gone up.
Yeah, go figure that one out. And if you want to, you want to follow Bitcoin, I find the best index is on Kitco. Click the markets tab and, you know, they're updating it regularly. It's easier than shuffling around the internet trying to track it down. And I think that about sums it up. Volatility was the word. And here we are, volatility in July. You can only imagine what's going to happen in August. And once everybody's back from vacation, I can't see this thing calming down at this point, Mickey.
Well, and so I embrace that idea. We love volatile markets. It gives us something to talk about every month. And it was unexpected in the middle of the summer doldrums to have such a volatile month, but it makes it fun to come to work every morning.
Oh, yeah. And then you just have to say, well, which one is it going to hit next? And then, you know, the volatility hits the markets in ways that you don't expect, like oil, right? Who would have thought?
Who would have thought? But you just got to be nimble and quick if you're a trader in these markets. And that's something always that's an asset, is be nimble, be quick, trade without emotion.
Yep, always without emotion. And on that note, Mickey, we will talk to you next month and see where we are then.
I look forward to it, Kerry.
All right, be well. We'll talk to you then.
You too. Okay, bye.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.